Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David.
Yes.
How you doing?
Well, I'm tired.
Guten Tag.
Ah, danke. it should be Guten Morgen because I'm still on Berlin time, where it is currently 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm a little sluggish today. That's why. But yeah, I just got back from a week and a half in, or I guess a little under a week in Berlin, and then a couple of days in Prague. It was delightful. Delightful might not be the right word because, we did a lot of tours and history type stuff. Mostly, it's funny. Germany's in some ways a very old country, and in some ways a country that's less than 30 years old.
Right.
Berlin particularly, because it was essentially flattened in World War II by bombs, is almost all new stuff, except every once in a while there's like, oh, that church is from 1250 or whatever.
Right, yeah.
So we did a lot of like this history stuff, almost entirely 20th century history. Mm-hmm. It was basically just the Third Reich and the DDR was like what we were.
Yeah.
When I say it was a blast, we did have a really fun time, but we spent a lot of our days sad. We went to a concentration camp, which is not fun. But I'm really glad we did that. But we also did go to the Deutsches Kinemathek Museum.
Okay.
Which I guess there's a bigger film museum in Potsdam, which is like, I guess, kind of outside of Berlin. But we went to the Kinemathek Museum in Berlin. It's a lot of fun. It's just the, history of German cinema, which is a varied and rich history. Even though the museum is essentially like two floors and like almost maybe half of the second floor, it just becomes the Marlene Dietrich Museum. They clearly are very proud of Marlene Dietrich. And that was like, a full quarter of the museum is Marlene Dietrich stuff. No real complaint.
And the rest of it, Max Schreck.
But it's funny, because it goes chronologically. So my wife pointed out when they're talking about the like Arnold Franck silent films starring Leni Riefenstahl. My wife was like, it's weird. There's all this Leni Riefenstahl stuff here and no reference of her being a propagandist. And then you get and it's like, oh, there it is. Even though it doesn't, I don't know if it's Germany as a whole and Berlin in particular is really good at handling its sort of Nazi history with a deft hand and clearly not burying it, but also not sensationalizing it. Or also, I think they're very cautious about putting up anything that could be seen as a monument that someone could take out of context.
Right.
There was a part in the museum at the concentration camp where they had a lot of anti-Jewish propaganda from the 1930s, and you're not allowed to take pictures in that part of the museum.
Interesting, because
they don't want, I might take a picture and put it on my Instagram. It's like, look how awful this is. But then some neo-Nazi just takes the picture and says the opposite. It's really, really careful about that. We talked, I think, off mic with Mike Siegel. Mm-hmm. And he told me, which he was absolutely right, that Hitler's bunker, there's nothing there to commemorate it. It's a dirt parking lot that you would never know. It's next to an East German like public housing building sort of near the Brandenburg Gate. You wouldn't know that it's there unless you had a tour guide saying, guess where we're standing right now.
It's such a fine line to walk because on one hand it is history and it is important history. Like Hitler and Stalin, history has a lot of monsters. But they are, for horrible reasons, they are a vital part of history. And so you're not sure how much to acknowledge it with that, because there's always the possibility that someone would be like, hell yeah.
Right.
And you're like, no, that's not why we're doing this. That's interesting.
Yeah. But it was really great. I wish the one time I wanted to be like super touristy, the Kinematek like has a gift shop, but it's like just books and movies. It's not like, I wanted like a t-shirt or a coffee mug with the Kinematek right. logo on it to say I'd been there. But, actually I don't need a coffee mug. I don't think I will for as long as I live, unless God forbid there's some sort of earthquake or fire where things get destroyed. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll ever need another coffee mug or another tote bag. I have so many right. coffee mugs and so many tote bags. I think I'm good.
Yeah, I have a number of coffee mugs and I don't drink coffee at home. Huh. So, unless it's got the Riddler on it, I don't need one.
Now that I say that, I don't have enough travel mugs. I could use another travel mug.
All right.
If anyone's looking to buy me a Christmas present. Not really. What else was
there? We do have a P.O. box.
So yeah, I had a...
And Christmas is coming.
True. Christmas is right around the corner.
Forgot how much you like saying that.
Yeah. I had a great time, learned a lot of history, and also got to walk around a lot of cool neighborhoods. Ate some German food. There's also a lot of like Middle Eastern food in Germany. I ate like a lot of shawarma in Berlin. I did eat pork knuckle, which is it tastes just like corned beef. So it was like served with potatoes. I was like, this could be an Irish pub or whatever. But food wise, so I said we went to Prague. I could go back to Prague and spend another week and a half there. Mm-hmm. Have you been to Prague? Mm-hmm. It's because unlike, it
looks gorgeous.
Yeah, that's the thing. Unlike Berlin, Prague was relatively unscathed by World War II in terms of bombing, at least. Mm-hmm. There was plenty going on there and plenty going on during the Soviet years, but in terms of its architecture, like everything is like Baroque and beautiful, and it's just like everywhere. It's like, it's not like, oh, there's a few buildings. It's everywhere you turn, and it's like that liquor store is on the first floor of a building that was built in 1740 or whatever. Yeah. It's beautiful, but Czech food is awesome.
Okay,
because Czech food, at least what I ate, is essentially bar food. It's all sausages and potatoes and fried meats and hearty stews. That's like all it is. It's so good.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. I had a great time. Still very tired, and I'm sure there's plenty of fun stuff I did that I'm leaving out. But no listeners contacted me to say, let's hang out.
I really pushed last week for them to call you or email you.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe we don't have any listeners in Germany.
That seems... Hey, you. Yeah, you. Guten Tag. That's my nickname for them now.
Yeah.
Let us know if you live in Germany and, you missed your chance to meet one David Bax, your podcasting hero.
So, yeah, that's what I did with my summer vacation.
All right.
So what do you have to say for yourself?
This episode is brought to you, I don't even want to transition. This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated online cinema that brings its members a handpicked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films. Every day, Mubi's curators introduce a new title, and you have 30 days to watch it. That means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, all for only $8.99 a month. Plus, when you use their mobile apps, you can download films to watch offline. So you only have a few days left to check out Horrific October. That's what they're calling it. Featuring some of the most eclectic and influential horror movies ever made. Right now, you can watch David Cronenberg's Shivers, George Romero's Season of the Witch, and by the time this airs, Ben Wheatley's Kill List, which I've not seen Season of the Witch. I have seen Shivers, and I have seen Kill List. Okay. And I can... Shivers is fine. It's very Cronenbergian with everything that that means. But I do adore Kill List. I think it's a really marvelous film. But anyway, so there is a special offer for listeners of Battleship Pretension. You can try Mubi free for a month. Just go to Mubi.com. That's MUBI.com/battleship to redeem now, or click on the ad at BattleshipPretension.com. This episode is also brought to you by Dice Enthusiasts. Hang on. I want to make sure I got this right. The Dice Enthusiasts Presents podcast, which is an offshoot of the regular Dice Enthusiast podcast. All right. Now, this new series is based around a board game that four roommates played for the entirety of 2017. During that year, they were faced with problems like drug dealers moving in with them, mental breakdowns, infidelity, and a suicide attempt. A surprisingly personal podcast, Dice Enthusiast Presents, is a prime example of life happening while you're making other plans or trying to play a game. Now, the episode that goes up on October 29th is... The episode itself is modeled after 70s thrillers and involves a drug dealer moving in with our hosts. You might think it'd be easy to kick out a drug dealer, unless, of course, it's your manager's son. Okay, so that's... I have not listened to this podcast yet. It's very rare for me to actually hear about a podcast and think, I want to listen to that.
Yeah.
This one sounds so crazy and... funny and complex and very personal. I'm really excited to see it. So you can go to DiceEnthusiast.com or you can click on the ad at BattleshipPretension.com to listen to this great new show.
And I want to tell you about TweakedAudio.com. TweakedAudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. And Tyler and I use them each and every day. Today, I've been catching up on all the music I didn't listen to while I was out of the country. Today, I was listening to the new track from Baby Metal. Have we talked about Baby Metal before?
I feel like I'd remember it.
Okay. It's a Japanese... metal band it's all girls, and they wear sort of like the Catholic schoolgirl type of uniform.
Nice.
And they sing now.
Yeah.
And they sing, the vocals are very poppy. It's like, mm-hmm. I feel like what started as kind of this novelty band where it's like, let's take essentially J-pop, but then put like sort of metal, you know, guitars behind it, has actually evolved into them becoming, because they write their, they're not just like, you know, figure, you know, not just like dancers or whatever, they write their own music and they've like developed their own voice, and they're a really, really good band, and they put out new music this week, or maybe last week. At the same time, they announced one of the members is leaving, which is unfortunate. But yeah, the new Baby Metal track, Starlight, I listened to it multiple times in a row, and it sounded delightful on my new on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. You can have the same experience. These earbuds are available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Tyler.
Yes.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Indeed.
It's spooky time. It is Halloween. It's horrific October.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for us to talk about horror movies.
Indeed.
Something we do every year. I was just saying on the movie journal a few days ago that I haven't had time to watch many horror movies this October. I'll probably end up doing what I do most years, which is watch a bunch of horror movies in November and December and January. Sure. To make up for it. One of the ones that I watched last year, post October, in catching up, was a movie called Whoever Slew Auntie Rue, which is a sort of horror retelling of modern day. No, not modern day. I think it takes place in the 1920s, maybe. Came out in the 70s, but it's a retelling of Hansel and Gretel, in which Shelley Winters plays a crazy old rich lady who lives alone, Miss Havisham style, and then has every Christmas Eve she has orphans over to for a feast, and she gives them all presents, and two, a brother and sister, get a little too curious, and they end up having to fight off this crazy lady. But it's, and I, but it just struck me as something that is part of a, I don't even, it's not even a trend. It maybe was a little bit of a trend at the time, but it's still ongoing. It's a legacy of movies where usually actresses, but some actors too, who maybe their star has faded, but they still have a lot of respect or whatever. They find themselves headlining or appearing in horror movies, often yeah. kind of schlocky horror movies, kind of exploitative horror movies in some way. And I looked it up. There are multiple names for this thing, at least when it comes to the women. There's names that I don't like,
okay.
like Hagsploitation yeah. and Psychobiddy. I don't like that. But then there's Grand Dame Guignol, which is,
there you go.
That's what I was like, oh, that's perfect. But I was realizing that I had thought about this before, that this is something that has happened. I think the first one, I'm going to end up blowing my whole list here, so I won't go too far. But I think the first time I really remember this is 1980s, I think, The Watcher in the Woods.
Yeah.
Featuring Betty Davis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Betty Davis from 60 years before.
Yeah.
You know, now playing, you know, she's the name in Watchmen. She's not the yeah. lead, but she's like the big name. And
as if to say, can you guys believe that we got Betty Davis?
Yeah. And I do. That's, I guess that's kind of what I talk about it. What I want to talk about is, why does this happen?
Yeah.
Do you think, I have my hypotheses. One of them being, I think
I have an industry hypothesis and I have an artistic hypothesis.
Well, I don't think it's, yeah. Here's my hypothesis, and I think you'll disagree with me because you and I have disagreed on the basic decency and lovability of horror fans in the past. I tend to really love horror movie fans, and I feel like there's something...
It depends on the kind of horror movie.
Yeah, fan. I know. That's yeah. what you always say. I feel like people who like horror, much like a lot of people who like metal or who like, you know, Dungeons & Dragons or stuff like that, like, there's something unironic and unpretentious about them. And so just because a star has fallen, they're like, I feel like horror movies don't, horror fans and people who make horror movies, they haven't lost any respect. They don't care that it's not cool anymore to have Betty Davis or Shelley Winters
right.
in your movie. They just like them, and they're going to put them in the movie because they're available now and affordable now, and they can do it. And I think that's one of the things that I love about this trend. Again, not trend, but this fact—the fact that this keeps happening—is that I think even though the movies themselves aren't quote unquote respectable, I think this casting often comes from a place of respect.
And I think, okay, so yeah, I think there is, like I said, I've got a couple different hypotheses about why this happens. I do think that from an industry standpoint, it's usually actors that are past their prime. They probably still work quite a bit, but you know, sort of in B movies and such. And for a long time, horror was B movie material. But also for a long time, the guys that were making horror movies were big fans of film. And, you know, not unlike, when Ed Wood was able to get Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
Who, of course, it's not as though he was new to horror or anything like that. But
yeah, but I think that is part of this same tradition.
In a way. It's this idea of we can get this. It will. What does he even say in Ed Wood? It goes, you know, if you take that crap and put a star in it, then you have something special, you know. And then Mike Starr says, yeah, crap with a star. But that's the thing. There is, there is something about the presence of these respected actors that kind of legitimizes this in the minds of certain people. Not just the people that were probably going to like it already. Mm. I think in their minds, it's like, hey, awesome, neat. But I do think there are people who could look at the presence of some of these older actors and they'd be like, oh man, really? Or others are like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's not full on acceptance, but it's, I'm giving it a second look now. I might not even go see the movie, but I didn't know they were in it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And yeah, I don't think they enjoy it any less because the person's not at the height of their
right
fame. It's sort of like the, you know, a band has maybe hit their peak, or they were a one hit wonder or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, so now maybe, you know, that's a bummer for them, but now you don't have to drive in the city and pay top dollar prices to see them at the arena. They're, you know, for $15, you can see, you know, the outfield or whatever play the state fair. And the people who go enjoy it, you know?
I'm reminded
that, by the way, I'm sure you didn't. I don't know why you would have heard this, but Slipknot is playing the Iowa State Fair.
There are so many reasons I wouldn't have heard of that. That's neat.
Because they're from Iowa. And this is like, this is the opposite of what I'm talking about. Because Slipknot are still plenty big. I don't know if you know that at all. But they're...
in my mind, they're as big as they've ever been.
That's probably true. But I think that's nice. It's cool that they're doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not the point.
Well, and it's interesting in my own way. I mentioned in the Movie Journal, I mentioned the Red Letter Media guys in their most recent episode in which they talk about the David Gordon Green Halloween. There's a special guest star, Macaulay Culkin. He shows up in their video.
Oh, I thought you were saying he was in the Halloween.
No, he shows up in their video, and they shoot in, they're based in Milwaukee. So that means he flew out to Milwaukee to be a part of this.
Or maybe he was in Milwaukee for something.
Maybe it's possible, but it could have been possible to look and be like, oh, Macaulay Culkin. Like, I know that you're not nearly as big as you used to be, but at the same time, what are you doing? Or you just kind of feel like, oh
yeah.
I'm kind of repeating myself, but it's, oh, he must be a fan of these guys. Why else would he be a part of it? I'm sure maybe they're paying him. Maybe he just is doing it because he likes it. Max Landis also went out to Milwaukee to guest on one of their shows. And so Tim Heidecker as well.
Oh, cool.
And so like they do have the occasional fan, and it doesn't look like the person is slumming it. Yeah. It causes me to, admittedly, I was already a fan of Red Letter Media, but it causes me to give them a second look as, oh, wow, they attract a bigger audience than just me, I guess. Not to imply that these actors that we're talking about are doing this out of a deep love of horror or anything like that.
Right. By the way, real quick, I want to say kudos to Macaulay Culkin for turning out okay. Right.
Yeah.
It really could have been bad.
Yeah.
And now he still seems like a weirdo, but he seems like a weirdo who came by it honestly, not because he's fucked up.
And he does seem to have a good perspective on how things have gone in his life.
Yeah.
Like he's an eccentric weirdo, but whatever. Like you grow up in the film industry.
Yeah.
You're going to be a weirdo.
But I also like, I do wish that he worked more because he was great in Party Monster.
Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And he was on Will and Grace. That was also a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I've seen him in anything all that recently. But I'd love to see him in more stuff. Anyway.
Okay, so I have several examples.
Well, now, I liked...
to me, there's one that's at the top of the list.
Okay. Well, hold on. Because what I was going to say is, I think if we are considering Bela Lugosi... In with Ed Wood,
I was using that as an example because he's still working. He's only ever worked in horror sci-fi genre.
Yeah, yeah. So then, what is the earliest version of this? Is it the thing you're about to say? which is Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
No, actually. Oh. Although that probably is the best example. Because you've got two.
Yeah.
You've got like two starlets who are in this very strange... it is considered a horror movie, right?
Yeah, and it's... I mean, it's not supernatural. It is, I guess, horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the definition of horror is pretty broad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that one is interesting because I've actually not seen it. I have heard it's very good, at the very least interesting. You've seen it, right?
Yeah, it's okay. I feel like it's a little over...
I'm sure it's hyped up solely because the two of them are in it.
No, but I mean, the movie itself is kind of... it seems a little overcooked. Mm-hmm. At times, but it's not bad. It is okay. It's indulgent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stands to reason.
So I was going to mark parameters here. So, and then we'll get to the one you were going to say.
Okay.
So if Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is the genesis, the most recent one that I can think of is just a 2 years ago or so, Faye Dunaway was in The Bye Bye Man.
No, okay.
And I feel like that's a part of this tradition, right? Faye Dunaway is exactly the type of actress.
Yeah, she's an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
That's perfect, yes. Now, okay, so as I was looking at this, I found... I didn't want to necessarily zero in on people... who kind of took this interesting turn. I also tried to look at people for whom they are rediscovered. Like let's look at it this way. For, I'd say, an entire generation of movie fans, Liam Neeson is an action guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know,
well, kind of like to people, you and I, you our age, mm-hmm. Leslie Nielsen was a comic actor.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And so along those lines, I do think that despite the, it's like 234 titles, I think for an entire generation of people, Donald Pleasance career started with Halloween.
Oh, that's interesting.
And his career after that, he was in the sequel, but he was in more horror-based movies after that. Not exclusively. And he'd been in some horror stuff before that, but not like this.
Yeah.
And so to me,
that was probably the first thing I saw him in, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly. Yeah. I mean, he'd been Blofeld in one of the 007 movies.
I hadn't seen that when I was a kid, though. It's For Your Eyes Only?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. But so for me, like, he's... Because that was also an independently produced movie. And it was a situation where, hey, we have enough money to have Donald Pleasance for a few days. But his presence is all over that movie.
Sorry, not For Your Eyes Only. That's Roger Moore.
Oh, okay.
You only live twice.
Okay,
sorry,
yes.
There are two Bond movies with the word only in the title.
Mm.
And I always get them mixed up.
Are you talking about Only Pussy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That was better. Yeah. That's. I was gonna try and do another one. I was like, no, I can't think. Like, Tomorrow Only Dies is not as funny.
So, I like it though.
Yeah,
Casino, no. Only Royale.
So yes, You Only Live Twice is the one where Donald Pleasance clearly wasn't the Roger Moore one. I'm not. Right. I'm not an idiot. I just. Sorry.
But yeah, to me, that's like the first place my mind goes, because he was this respectable actor who'd been in like almost 200 movies by that time. And then he's in this and the movie's a big hit. Mm-hmm. And now it's not like there was a big gap either. He was in stuff well through, you know, throughout the 70s. But I'm sure there are people for whom that's the only movie he's been in. You know,
sure.
And I don't mean to say that in a derogatory way, but just like his career got a boost. Sorry, not a boost. He was doing fine.
Yeah.
It just took a complete left turn after that.
Right.
And I would say somebody like an Anthony Hopkins, he wasn't only in horror after Silence of the Lambs, but he'd been in, I mean, he was in Lion in Winter. He was in Elephant Man. Like, he'd been in a bunch of stuff, and then he plays Hannibal Lecter and he wins an Oscar for it.
Yeah.
And suddenly you see him in
Magic before.
He was in Magic. That's true. When he was young. Yeah.
Yeah. I never saw that one.
But that's the thing is, like, he was in that, and then he just went back to being Anthony Hopkins, classically trained stage actor, who acts in movies. But, like, with Silence of the Lambs, yeah, he went on to play Nixon. He was in Amistad and all that kind of thing. But they also cast him in these very loquacious characters who were menacing. If it wasn't horror, it would be suspense. And then he would play Lecter twice more. But he was in, you know... Was it Fracture? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Fracture.
Yeah, and just stuff like that, and The Right, and then he was in Bram Stoker's Dracula when they remade The Wolfman. He played the Claude Rains character.
Sure, yeah.
So his career certainly, as he was older, because I think he was into his 60s, maybe late 50s by the time he played Lecter. So I think it's safe to say that he. What are we considering old? I guess that's the other question.
That's a good question. Yeah. Because, I thought of the same thing because, Vincent Price had like a 20 year acting career before House of Wax and House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
Which were like kind of, they were only a couple years apart. And then Vincent Price is just a horror guy from then on. And for not quite as long, and he wasn't quite as well known, but even like Christopher Lee did non-horror movies for a while, and then Curse of Frankenstein is 57, and then that's all he did.
That's all she wrote.
and that's great. And that reminds me of one of the great movies for older male actors showing up in horror movies is The House That Dripped Blood, which has the aforementioned Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. It also has Denham Elliott.
Oh, all right.
And it has, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Joss Ackland.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. And I feel like there's someone else that I'm, there's one of the doctors from Doctor Who. I can't remember his name because I don't know Doctor Who very well. But that seems like, it seemed like kind of a gathering of some guys like, obviously Christopher Lee was not new to horror by the early 70s. Even Peter Cushing had done horror before that too. But that movie seems to be a part of what I'm talking about from the male movie,
right,
which doesn't have a clever name like Grand Dame Guignol, but,
it's just old guys working.
Yeah. But do you know what I've never seen this movie.
Okay.
It's from the 80s. It is from 1981. And a horror movie called Ghost Story.
Okay.
Which...
I can picture the VHS cover.
Yeah, it stars Fred Astaire, John Houseman, Melvin Douglas, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Patricia Neal. It's like...
It's a who's who.
People, and this is 1980, like people, all those people were past the prime that we know them from, you know, those are actors from the 30s and 40s. And I'll admit the way that I heard about this movie, Ghost Story, cause I don't remember from the VHS store, a few years ago on, The Best Show, which is a podcast that I love and reference all the time. There was one of the funny comedy characters that called in was insisting that movie was one of those movies like Poltergeist that's cursed because everyone in it is dead now.
That's fun.
Yeah. I'd love to see that. I don't know if it's any good, but,
it would certainly be interesting. It's basically like a horror, that's entertainment.
yeah. And then, the other one is kind of like House of the Drip Blood, but this one I haven't seen, is House of the Long Shadow, House of the Long Shadows, plural, which has it has Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, but it also has Vincent Price, Desi Arnaz Jr., John Carradine. I don't know if it's supposed to be good or not, but I've definitely heard about it.
Yeah, and it's and then you get stuff along those lines of like those classical like British actors. You get someone like James Mason showing up in Salem's Lot.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But again, it goes back to this idea of like, what are we counting as
Gregory Peck
as older?
And the Omen.
Gregory Peck and the Omen is a big one.
Yeah.
And then I wrote Max von Sydow in The Exorcist, and then I was like, I don't actually know how old he was in that. He looked old, but I don't think he was actually that old, considering that he's still around now and looks like he hasn't aged really.
I think he looks pretty old now.
He looks, I suppose so, but like
I just
he
saw
looks.
Him, I didn't see him. I saw him in a movie at TIFF, the submarine movie Kursk.
Okay.
Where he has some one-on-one scenes with Colin Firth.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, powerhouse.
There. Yeah.
He definitely seems old.
Okay. And that's the thing is just, I think it was fairly effective old. What I mean to say is that he seemed old in The Exorcist. So I think the old age makeup, he was probably only in his 40s or 50s, okay. if that.
Well, yeah. Because what year is The Exorcist?
73.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because he was in The Emigrants in the New Land right before that, and he's not doesn't seem particularly
so
old.
So I don't think I will count that as an example of like someone finding horror in his older years. I will mention a couple guys here who recently passed away. Scott Wilson, the great Scott Wilson, was in Behind the Mask, and then he was on a few seasons of The Walking Dead,
and he was in The Host.
Who's in The Host?
He's the American doctor at the very beginning who forces the Korean.
That's right.
The Korean doctor to flush the toxins, which is what creates the monster. He's in the opening scene, and that's it. And he's nice. Terrific. Yeah, and then I know who you're going to say next, and I'm legitimately like broken up about this guy's death because he's one of my favorite character actors.
Yeah, and he's been around forever.
He's 94 years old.
94.
James Caron.
Yeah.
Who
we had just talked about somewhat recently. He was in Return of the Living Dead.
And Return of the Living Dead Part 2. He's in both of them as different characters because he definitely is not playing the same character because I said this on Twitter and I feel like people think that I'm joking, but James Caron's death scene in the first Return of the Living Dead is a contender for my favorite death scene in the history of movies.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to spoil it, but I don't know if I should say,
will your description actually ruin the tone of it?
No, he knows he's turning into a zombie and they're at, because it takes place in a graveyard and they're hiding in the like crematorium.
Mm-hmm.
And so he turns on the oven and he cremates himself alive to keep himself from turning into a zombie.
Wow.
It's crazy. And that's one of the things about James Caron is that he could often play, you know, very menacing, like gravitas type of characters. Yeah. But in the Return of the Living Dead movies, he is going for broke. He's playing to the back row, bouncing off the walls and with no self consciousness, at all. And I had always liked James Caron just because he's one of those character actors that shows up and you're like, okay, this is going to be, this is going to be a solid scene right here.
Yeah.
And then I watched the two Return of the Living Dead movies and I was like, this guy is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he had that much, commitment, but also I don't even know if he really counts for this because I feel like he didn't start acting until late.
Whereas
Scott Wilson was a young actor, he's in Heat of the Night, right?
Yeah, and he's in Cold Blood as well. And then James Caron was also in Poltergeist.
You move the gravestones, but you left the bodies. That's what Craig T. Nelson says to him.
Yes.
And he's also in another movie that I watched recently. Another horror movie called The Unborn, which is also another nutso movie where he plays a experimental obstetrician who it turns out is dabbling in eugenics to raise an army of superhuman babies. That The Unborn is such a great movie. Caron, is it Caron Allen or am I getting it confused? I think it's Caron Allen is the lead.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it called again?
The Unborn.
The Unborn.
It's really, really great.
So looking at his filmography, he definitely had acted before this, and had acted as far back as like 1948, but then it was 51, 56, 62, 64. So like he hadn't been acting that long before Poltergeist.
Sorry, it's not Karen Allen, it's Brooke Adams, who has a very Karen Allen type of... Brooke Adams is the girlfriend from The Dead Zone, and also from the 70s Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yes, okay, got it.
She's a Karen Allen type,
That
right?
is a very... That's a that's an almost off-putting... I'm now suspicious of something. Speaking of scientific experiments. So, and actually, as I was looking through... James Caron's filmography, I see that he was in a show in 1964 called The Defenders. And looking at it here, I see E.G. Marshall, who was in that. I feel like I've referenced it a lot in the last couple of months. He was in one of the stories of Creepshow.
Oh, where yeah, he's yeah, this, yeah.
He's this older guy who winds up dead with a body full of roaches that just crawl out of his corpse. It's very disturbing.
Okay. So I was wrong. James Caron has credits going back into his twenties in the 40s when he was in his 20s,
but not that much. It's not as though he did a bunch of stuff in the 40s. He did one thing and he did a few things in the 60s. And then the 70s really seems to be where he, started. So considering that he just died in 94, I guess he did start later ish in life.
Yeah. Rest in peace, James Caron. I think maybe because I had just watched within the last year or so, both Return of the Living Dead, or the first two Return of the Living Deads and The Unborn, James Caron was fresh in my memory, and it was very sad to see him go. Yeah. And yeah, I've been a Scott Wilson fan for a long time. I'm trying to think what I would have first thought of him.
I think from. I first saw him in Pure Luck.
I saw Pure Luck. I can't say it stuck with me enough for me to remember his performance there.
And so it's so interesting how one thing can lead to another, to another, to another, because then looking at E.G. Marshall, I ran across something with William Hickey, and William Hickey was in, he'd been around for a long time. And then in the 80s and into the 90s, he started acting in, he was in Tales from the Dark Side. He was on an episode of, I think it was, The Outer Limits, a particularly good episode of The Outer Limits. He was in an episode of Tales from the Crypt in the 90s. So like when he got old, he was undeniably old.
Yeah.
He's another example. So I have a few others, but I also had a subset to talk about, but
let me run a couple past, because I'm pretty much at the end of my list. One, I don't know if you'd count it, but Ernest Borgnine in Willard.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I was trying to think of, you know, I said Faye Dunaway in The Bye-Bye Man, but I feel like Jessica Lange in the American Horror Story series maybe is a part of that tradition.
But wasn't she was in a movie that I guess is more suspense or whatever called Hush.
I never saw Hush.
And it's a ridiculous over-the-top performance.
There was a movie called Hush in the past couple of years, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't that one. Okay. It was before that. Where I think she's, if I recall correctly, she's the obsessive and possessive mother of like this son who has just started dating this woman, and Jessica Lange starts terrorizing this woman. And I think that was in the 90s, maybe early 2000s. There's a fine line between suspense and horror, but I think that fell more on the thriller side as opposed to, from what I've not seen a single episode, a single minute of American Horror Story. I hear it's interesting and I think I'd probably enjoy it, or at least some seasons instead of others. But,
I only watched a couple of seasons, but it just seems like, I don't know. It feels more like riffing than it is. Than storytelling.
Sure.
It's just like, here's the basic premise, and then every episode is going to have three or four completely crazy ideas, and the scenes in between them are just links to get to the next crazy idea. Yeah. It doesn't, and they never end in any sort of with any sort of cohesion,
as opposed to something like Hannibal, which is just such a features a lot of crazy ideas and horrific imagery and that sort of thing, but it seems so planned out very meticulously. Okay, what else you got?
The last one I was going to say, this is one where I am only I'm familiar with the actor. I've never seen any of his late year horror stuff.
Okay.
And I don't know that you have either, but I think we're both fans of the actor Basil Rathbone.
Sort of, yeah.
But his, like, the last movies he made were Queen of Blood, The Ghost in the Invisible Bikini, which is more of a comedy, I guess, Hillbillies in a Haunted House, Autopsy, a Dune Fantasma. Like, he, Basil Rathbone ended his career in the mid to late 60s making horror movies.
Is this, I mean, but... That's not at all uncommon. Like, so that's now two Sherlock Holmeses that would go on to be in horror movies in their later years. Like, is this just
Tales of Terror in 62?
Is this just a thing for older British actors, especially?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I mean, that seems to be my thesis here. So this is, a longstanding tradition that we should keep up.
And I would say, you know, I feel like because of Mad Love and M, I feel like Peter Lorre, who would go on to be in some of those like Edgar Allan Poe, Roger Corman things in his 60s.
Yeah.
Not that he lived long into his 60s, but, you know, he was in The Raven and such. But I think because he was young, when he was younger, he kind of cut his teeth on a certain type of horror. I don't think he necessarily counts here. In fact, if anything, I'm surprised he wasn't in more horror, in between. But, okay, so I've got...
Yeah, what's your subset?
Well, hang on. Before I get to that, I'd say Stephen Lang for Don't Breathe.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he was in Manhunter, but not in a... That's not necessarily horror. It's horrific. Yeah. And his character's like a villain, and he's a supporting role and that kind of thing. And he'd been villains in things like Avatar, but I feel like I like Don't Breathe a lot. I think there's a lot of horror schlock to it as well.
Yeah.
But I think he injects some respectability to the proceedings in his performance.
Yeah.
And his character is required to do some pretty crazy things too. But he manages to like, again, the director, was it Fede Alvarez?
Oh, was that?
Okay. You know, he'd done stuff before, and the young cast had done stuff before, but like they bring in this veteran actor to play this old crusty evil guy. And I feel like it kind of fits. I think it fits with what we're talking about. And I don't think of him in roles like that, in movies like that previously. And even like Manhunter was directed by Michael Mann, who would be this prestige, filmmaker. But, so then I also had younger actors who became horror icons and then just went and did other things and then returned to their characters.
Okay.
Like
Jamie Lee Curtis,
Anthony Perkins.
Okay.
Who, you know, was in Psycho in 60 and then Psycho 2 was like 1982 or 3. And so he'd been in a plenty of stuff in between. I think maybe for me, most notably Murder on the Orient Express in 74. But yeah, he came back to Norman Bates and then they did like Psycho 2, 3, and 4 in between 82 and like 91. So he was clearly fine with being back in this role. But I'm not sure if he, I mean, it counts, but at the same time, I don't know if he came back to horror so much as he came back to Norman Bates and he just wanted to play that character.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, that reminds me of,
Jamie Lee Curtis, like she didn't need Laurie Strode. Like she, like she moved on to other things and could still be doing other things.
But the horror community will always welcome these people back. That's what but here's an example of someone who never really left horror, and is now getting to the age, she's probably in her late 50s, early 60s by now. Barbara Crampton
Okay.
is someone who was sort of like a Scream Queen when she was younger, in when she was like in her 20s in the 80s. And as an, she's sort of remained in horror. And this is again, me, toasting horror fans for, and the horror industry for so many women who played, you know, sexpot type roles.
Right.
Don't get to, you know, Hollywood doesn't let them hang around, you know? Even not even sexpot, I mean, any, so many women, you know, Rosanna Arquette made a whole documentary about it called Certificate for Deborah Winger. It's really good. So many women seem to unfairly age out. Whereas Barbara Crampton is now, has gone from being Scream Queen to being Grand Dame of horror. And I feel like horror and horror fans have been there for her the whole time. And she's great, by the way. I love Barbara Crampton in, you know, the fact that she's the mom in Your Next, you know, when she would have been the teen, maybe not the teen, but the younger person in the earlier generation. I love it.
And along those lines, I feel like someone like Kathy Bates, who relatively early in her career was in Misery, won an Oscar for that. And then she had been, then she was in stuff like Dolores Claiborne, like another Stephen King type thing. And then, you know, Primary Colors and About Schmidt and all that kind of thing. And now the big thing she is in is American Horror Story.
Right. Yeah.
I did also want to briefly mention, this does not fall into the category we're talking about now, but, Helen Mirren was in Winchester this year. And I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, I mean, I saw, you know, I saw The Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover. She's in that. She's fairly young in that. But I'm not super familiar with her early career. I don't know of a lot. She was in Prime Suspect and stuff. I don't know if she did a lot of horror, really any horror, but for her to be in something like Winchester, like, so in the film marketing class that I took, that was taught by like the head of CBS Films, they were doing Winchester. And so she talked about all about like that Helen Mirren, the woman said, she goes, look, we all knew it wasn't a good movie, but we don't, we're not looking to make a lot of money either. And Helen Mirren clearly was just having a whole lot of fun. And so she was all in on every bit of marketing. Like she really, anything that the film needed from her, like she'd be more than happy to be a part of it. Like she really was excited to do it. And that's, I do great. Wonder if maybe that is part, like you're talking about with James Caron, if that is some of the appeal is, you know, I've had to be subtle and restrained my whole acting career, and now's my chance to really, you know, cut loose.
I don't know anyone who saw Winchester.
Neither did I, but apparently it made its money.
Oh, good.
Because it was one of those things, like the film, came out about 5 weeks into class, so we got, she let us know, okay, here's what we're anticipating, that kind of thing from a marketing standpoint. You know,
sounds like a great class every time you talk about it.
It was a really marvelous class, and it reminded me more so than really, it probably wasn't my favorite class at UCLA, but it reminded me of a Columbia class because that was taught
Columbia
by
Columbia College Chicago.
Yes, that's
not
the
Columbia
one.
University.
Yeah, who gives a shit about that? But yeah, Columbia College Chicago, like that was taught often by people that had worked in some capacity in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so her being able to talk about very specifically what was happening right at this moment and bringing in guests and stuff, it was really fascinating. And this movie that just came out, Hellfest, like I think it came and went, but they were putting that out as well. And she called in like one of the guys responsible for the advertising campaign for it. And so he showed like 30 different potential posters, including the one that they wound up using. And he's like, okay, these are what we've narrowed it down to from a much larger number.
Yeah.
Which, who likes what?
I think I mentioned before, 10 years ago, I was in, a temp at MGM Studios, in the records and archives department. And I don't know if you remember a little horror thriller that came and went. I think it starred Milo Ventimiglia called Pathology.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we were going through just the records, and then we had to, like, box stuff up and send it to shipping. And it astounded me how many posters they mock up for stuff. And some of the posters that they were unused for Pathology were so cool.
Yeah.
And it made me sad that stuff gets market tested to the point of lifelessness to where it's like, oh no, we got to have the star's face. Or you got to like, and you take like, you've got these, you know, I've seen it happen in other parts of the industry that I can't really talk about because I don't talk about my job now, but you get this outside group of creative people and you say, mock us up a thing. Mm-hmm. And they come up with a few ideas and they go for broke. They exercise their creative juices and have come up with awesome stuff. And then it usually ends up getting watered down to the client just wanting the most basic version. And it was, I've still never seen Pathology, but I remember
someday though.
Yeah. I wish I could have kept some of these really, really cool posters.
Yeah. Oh, there, I mean, some of the posters for Hellfest, one of them, like I loved, and it was one of those things I was like, they'd be dumb not to use that one. And that's not the one they used. The one they use is fine, but it's not the one that I thought would work best. And then they also talked about, you know, names on a poster, and that's, you know, it has to do with like what has been negotiated. But when you have like a two-hander and it can be argued that neither one of them is more important than the other, then what you do is you have, because we read top to bottom, left to right. Okay. So what you do is if you have them on the same level, the one on the left is the one we're going to see as being more important. So if you have them on the same level, there's the one on the left, and then the one on the right is raised above the one on the left. And it's one of those things that like, we won't see that person as above the person on the left because we read left to right, but we certainly won't see the person on the left as being like, it's a way, it uses the way we read.
That's awesome.
To like, make agents and managers happy. So, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
So anyway, but,
we should wrap up. That reminds me of the, I don't know if this is apocryphal or not, but I think I've told this story before about the origin of someone like a particularly notable actor in a movie who has a smaller part in the movie getting the credit. That the apparent origin of that was the movie The Longest Day, which the director in the studio wanted, because they wanted it to be a true ensemble. They were just, we're just going to list the cast alphabetically. And John Wayne wanted to stand out because he's John Wayne.
Yeah.
And he was being named Wayne. He was at the end of the list anyway. Yeah. And so that's how they came up with the "and John Wayne" to make John Wayne happy. I don't know if that's true, that the true origin of the "and" thing, but I like it as a story.
I remember, you know, that movie, The General's Daughter. Okay. So I remember the, beyond, I think, John Travolta and
Madeline Stowe,
the rest of the cast was listed alphabetically. And I think it said like with Clarence Williams III and James Woods. And I was like, wait a second, what's going on here? They're just the last ones. And it just seemed like, I feel like someone is being placated here.
Yeah.
Without any real concession being made. But anyway, hopefully everybody has a good and safe and spooky Halloween.
Yeah.
As you go and watch these scary movies with older actors who are probably having the time of their lives.
Yeah, definitely watch Return of the Living Dead 1 and 2. I don't actually think they're great movies.
Yeah.
But, and watch The Unborn, and then watch, what did we say for Scott Wilson? The Host.
Behind the Mask.
Behind the Mask. Yeah. Yeah. Dedicate your Halloween to, two late great character actors.
Indeed.
So you can find us at battleshipretention.com. That's where you can find all sorts of, movie reviews and other podcasts and other, other thoughts and odds and ends at battleshipretention.com. You can follow us, or you can email us. I usually say that one next, at david@battleshipretention.com or tyler@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter at Davey Pretension. You can follow Tyler on Twitter at Tyler Pretension. You have another podcast called More Than One Lesson.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do any, do an episode this week. So this is the first Halloween times where we only had two episodes instead of the usual four.
Bummer.
Last week we did talk about Alex Garland's Annihilation, which
not to be confused with Avengers Annihilation, which is coming out in 2019,
right, or Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which I'll say this. I got those confused for like 25 minutes and I was just like, I don't understand. When is Natalie Portman going to start fighting? But there was that scene where Oscar Isaac says, get over here. And, sure. But I did actually want to mention that, we do have an Instagram account that I keep updated as much as I can when I think of it.
Thanks for doing that.
But yeah, so you can check us out on Instagram as well.
All right. We also have a Snapchat, but I don't think anyone uses Snapchat anymore.
Oh yeah. I haven't heard the word in a while.
I think, do you know what actually, okay, I don't know if this is true, much like the longest day thing, but basically Snapchat redesigned their platform.
Okay.
And one of the Jenners, like Kylie or Kendra or what, Kendall, I don't know. One of the Jenners.
Yeah.
Hated it and was very public about how much she hated it, and is such a powerful person in social media that basically she just stopped using Snapchat and everyone stopped using Snapchat. You pissed off one person with a site redesign or
somebody
an app redesign.
Who is unfortunately very influential, but probably maybe partially because of Snapchat.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it unfortunate? I don't know. I don't have an opinion on her.
It's more just, there are people who are famous. I don't have a problem. I'm sure she's a perfectly fine person. It's more just
probably not actually, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to be magnanimous.
I just not trying to be mean. I'm just saying if you grow up in that much of a privileged sheltered bubble, you probably don't have a lot of empathy.
Probably not. You never know. You never know.
Yeah. You never know.
There are
Macaulay Culkins out there proving us wrong.
I was going to say Bruce Wayne, then I realized he doesn't actually exist. but no, it's more just the idea that, like, I feel like such an old man.
Uh-huh.
The idea of, like, famous for being famous, you know, and famous for not even really having opinions and expressing them well. You know, or anything like that. Like, there are podcasters that we like, and radio personalities that all they do is express their opinion, but they have a way of expressing themselves that is entertaining or thought provoking or whatever. And maybe she's tremendously that, but somehow I get the feeling she's not.
I feel like it's like, I also don't know, 'cause I never watched it, but it's like the royal family or something. Like, she was just born into this thing and she has duties to do.
Yeah. And I guess,
I don't know. I guess I try to be understanding, because I also think it kind of sounds awful being like,
sure. No question.
She's rich and that's great. But, being under that much attention, sounds actually terrible to me, to be honest.
Yes, that would be very exhausting. I remember I was on Ventura Boulevard one time and, I saw like a rush of people like gathered around just a store, and it was one of the Kardashians, and I don't know which one, but everyone's like, "Oh, it's so and so, so," and I was just like, "I'm sure she just wants to go buy something, and that's it," you know?
Yeah, yeah. But it's funny. I mean, I know we're supposed to be wrapping up, but I hate to. You know, I don't want to be one of those people like. Because I hate when people are dismissive or say derogatory things about the Valley, but I work in Beverly Hills, and that doesn't happen in Beverly Hills. Like,
right?
I mean, I'm not saying there's paparazzi in Beverly Hills,
yeah.
But you're not going to like
a good amount of this crowd was paparazzi, okay. but yes, there are also just people in general who, my guess, they saw the paparazzi and thought there must be someone in there.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You're less likely to get gawkers, but you're also probably less likely to see celebrities in Beverly Hills on the weekends, which Like I said, I work in Beverly Hills. I don't usually have to go on the weekends. Mm-hmm. I try to avoid it if I can, because the Rodeo Drive is insane.
Yeah.
Like, to try and get into the parking garage in my building on a Saturday afternoon, it adds 20 minutes because it's just clogged with people.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, yeah, if Reese Witherspoon walked down Rodeo Drive on a Saturday afternoon, yeah, she'd probably get mobbed. But on a Tuesday morning,
yeah, that's true.
She's probably okay. But.
All right. Well, good for her. That's the point you're making, right?
Well, I mentioned Reese Witherspoon in particular because I had a coworker who once was walking to the sidewalk, and he got back like to work, and he was like, I was just walking toward work, and Reese Witherspoon was walking on the sidewalk in front of me. And then, like, later that day, he checked like a gossip blog and saw like himself blurry and, like, in the background of a paparazzi shot of Reese Witherspoon.
I had had a situation when I was interning for Larger Than Life Films, which is Gary Ross's company. Uh-huh. I was interning, and then there was a day when Tobey Maguire came in, and he was like all decked out in like bicycling uh-huh. attire, and then Gary walked out of his office, and he also had it. So I was like, okay, so they're gonna go on a bike ride together. And yeah, sure enough, like, I saw an image. I don't know if I was like, I wasn't watching TMZ. I don't watch TMZ, but uh-huh. in some capacity, it might have been on a magazine. I think it was on TV, but anyway, I saw like, oh, Tobey Maguire, like all you know, in skin tight, you know, whatever. And I was just like, hey, I saw him like right before the, oh, he's just trying to have a bike ride with his buddy. But
yeah, I don't know Tobey Maguire. I don't feel bad for him.
I know you don't.
Well, ever since I learned that the Michael Cera character in Molly's Game is based mm-hmm. on Tobey Maguire.
Oh yeah.
Sounds like a fucking sociopath guy.
It's so fascinating when you think of his like movie image,
right,
like
yeah.
as just this soft spoken, like the nicest guy in the world. You know, when you think of him in like the Ice Storm or I mean, and even Spider-Man, but Ice Storm, Pleasantville, and that could, I don't know, I guess maybe, you know, I guess a sociopath is good at, I guess they can fake
sure,
it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's such a good actor. And I do think he's a good actor. Anyway, okay.
But we can move on. I was going to say something else about paparazzi or something, but oh well, can't think of it.
They're doing God's work. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.